The presenting sponsor of today's podcast is Fifth Element CBD. Fifth Element is ultra-high milligram CBD focused on relief and recovery after a workout. They are specially designed for people with an active lifestyle, from weekend warriors to professional athletes to bucket list gym enthusiasts. Fifth Element, aka 5E, is full-spectrum high-milligram hemp to help you whenever, wherever you need it, whether it's after the gym or after work. Get yours today to feel better tomorrow by visiting 5ehemp.com and use the promo code MONSTER for 50% off. Yes, you heard that right. 50% off. Half off. That's 5ehemp.com and use the code MONSTER. Go to 5ehemp and get 50% off. That's the number 5, the letter E, hemp.com.
You're listening to the Red Sea Podcast, part of the Over the Monster Network.
Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champions.
Hosted by Jake Devereaux.
It's gone. It's into the bullpen. This game is tied. This game is tied. David Ortiz. David Ortiz. David Ortiz.
And featuring Keaton DeRosier.
It's a grand slam.
Welcome back to the Red Sea Podcast. This is your host, Jake Devereaux, and today joining me for episode 203 is Keaton DeRosier of Over the Monster and the Dynasty Guru. Keaton, welcome back to another episode of our tremendously awesome show.
Glad to be back, and we've got some baseball about to start. That's fun. And we're almost to the main episode, too.
The main episode?
Yeah, the 207.
Oh, okay, the old 207 area code episode. I was like, okay. Yeah. Well, we just passed the Washington, D.C. area code episode. And you know what's really odd is we are at the exact same episode as the Sox Prospects podcast right now.
Wow.
Yeah, really weird. It took them a little bit longer, I think, to get to this point. I think they have been going since like 2006. But yeah, we are at the exact same point right now. I think we'll probably overtake them because we're weekly, but, you know, interesting to be at that point. Another great show over there. But today we have a very full show of our own. We are going to be touching on some of the recent Red Sox transactions and then talking quite a bit about spring training. So let's get right into it, Keaton. Red Sox made a little bit of a transaction here. They acquired some quality prospect depth in Ronaldo Hernandez for Chris Mazza and Jeffrey Springs, two guys who had just been DFA'd by the team. In addition to Ronaldo Hernandez, they also added Eric Sogard's cousin, Nick Sogard. But yeah, I mean, a pretty interesting little trade that happened on the 17th. So, I mean, the day after Jeffrey Springs was DFA'd, and 5 days after Chris Mazza was DFA'd, they get traded for a really solid prospect.
Yeah, I love this. Affinity for catchers aside, Hernandez is probably a bit more polished defensively than he is offensively, but his offense is not far behind at all. 20 homer power. So far in the minors, he's been scooting too. 10 steals in 2018, 7 in 2019, and just over 100 games in both. But strikeouts, super in check, never been higher than 15%. Walk rate isn't great, but you know, it's not very many catchers that are. But he can also hit for average at every level that he's been in, which has been the lower ends of the minors so far. He hasn't had trouble hitting for average. It's a very interesting offensive skill set to go with a 70 arm and a really talented defensive catcher. The entire combination there is really interesting. And I feel like it's probably because of his age that they were able to trade two DFA guys. He's 23, so he's a little bit older for having not played above A ball yet. But a guy that we have both talked about previously on the Dynasty's Child podcasts as a guy that we liked in the Tampa system, and to be able to just swap out two bad relievers who had been DFA'd for an extremely interesting prospect with upside, I love it.
Yeah, and it's a position where the Red Sox are weak in their system too, so that helps quite a bit. Sox prospects ranked him as the number 14 prospect in the system, so that's pretty high. He slots in right behind Nick York and right ahead of Brainer Bonacci, to give you an idea of kind of where he fits in terms of the system, and fits in as the number one catching prospect for the Red Sox as well. They have him above Colton Wong. Yes, thank you. Connor Wong.
I wish Colton.
Colton is the pitcher. too many Wongs. Man, I wish it was Colton too. Colton is the second baseman. Now I'm thinking of Colton Brewer. Oh my God, names. wow, this podcast is off to a great start for me. Okay. Anyhow, yeah, you're right. He's a really interesting player in a lot of ways. I think the knock on Hernandez and the reason why he was traded was because his receiving skills aren't amazing. He does have that great arm, like you mentioned, but receiving's a little bit weak for him. And as of now, when we don't have robot umps, that matters a little bit. So that's a skill he'll have to continue to work on. And he doesn't walk at all. So that's also a knock with Hernandez. Is he's just a little bit of an impatient hitter, gets himself into trouble, gets himself out by swinging a little bit too much. But as you also mentioned, Keaton, he doesn't strike out a lot. So that's a pretty good thing about him. Definitely a very interesting offensive player, and hopefully he can develop into something. Nick Sogard, though, doesn't sound like nearly as interesting a guy.
Nope. Only a handful of games in 2019 so far in A ball, and I believe he had 290, 20 steals, no homers. So he's 23 and just really hasn't played much. So I guess maybe they just didn't really know what they have, but not a super tantalizing skill set. But you know,
nope,
he's a guy.
Yeah, a guy for the system, guy for some added depth, which, again, Bloom has just done a really nice job of adding depths around the roster where he needs to. This move is particularly important as we head into spring training, though, because Kevin Plawecki was just placed on the COVID-19 IL, along with Franchy Cordero, who was also placed on that list, and Chris Sale was also moved to the 60-day IL with his recovery from Tommy John surgery. So a few little moves there, but you know, with the lack of catching depth and at spring training, you need all the catchers that you can possibly have. So, you know, it helps to get a guy like Ronaldo Hernandez into the system to continue to shoulder some of that load for all of the pitchers who are there that need work.
Yeah, and it's also worth noting that, so he hasn't played above the lower levels of the minors, but he was part of the alternate site player pool for Tampa last year, so he did get some work in last year and continued to, you know, progress. So maybe that's a bad thing. As you said, he still needs a little bit of work on his receiving, and they just got an intimate look at him for a few months. But the skill set of the prospects makes it really exciting for what they gave up. I really like that move, but him having some experience with the alternate site and those exhibition games, I think, will help him into spring training. So he's seen competition at higher levels through the minors because of that site. So I don't know. I guess we won't know until we actually start having a minor league season again what development from that site looked like and how far guys progress. But he did at least get to work with some guys in the upper ends of the system, and guys that were called up to the major league level.
Yeah, absolutely. Another minor move, Red Sox claimed John Schreiber, a 27-year-old reliever off of waivers from Detroit. He's a bit of a submarine-type pitcher, is what I've gathered from him. And they reclaimed Joel Piamps, who they had released earlier when they put I believe it was Franchi on the IL. They claimed Piamps. So, couple other minor moves that are happening. So Piamps is just really bouncing around quite a bit. He's been on like three teams in the past month, but now he's back at home with the Red Sox for the next week, anyways. So we'll see what happens there. But as we open up to spring training, we have had pitchers and catchers report. Spring is almost here, believe it or not, even though you are in Chicago and I am in the greater Boston area and it is very cold still. But what are you going to be watching for as spring training really gets underway? Are there any particular prospects that you're going to be keeping an eye on as camp happens?
Yes. The biggest guy that I'm going to be watching is Jarren Duran. Because of the lack of a true center fielder at the major league level, and the expectation that at some point he can debut here in 2021, I want to see him get so much playing time with these guys and maybe even push to be called up sooner than like a September, late August kind of deal, and get a bunch of playing time in Fenway. The pitching is also something that I'm going to be watching just because I want to see how the second half of the rotation shakes out and whether they actually roll with a five or a six. But I'm mostly interested in Jarren Duran and his progress.
Yeah, Jarren Duran is maybe the most interesting prospect in the Red Sox system because of the steps forward that he's taken over the last year and a half, and also how he performed playing in Puerto Rico and in the Caribbean series as well. In that Caribbean series that ran from January 31st to February 6th, he batted 400 with a 500 OBP and a 640 slug over 25 at-bats. He absolutely killed it there. He was actually named to the Caribbean League All-Star team, a finals MVP. I mean, the dude crushed it in Puerto Rico after getting off to a slow start. Just crazy athletic. The bat continues to improve. He's so interesting, man. I think that you're right. He could find himself in Boston pretty quickly, especially considering the fact that the Red Sox have these outfielders that are kind of question marks. I mean, Franchi, who knows? Big injury history. Hunter Renfroe, I know you love him, but you know he's still got some questions. A lot of places where Duran could find himself on this roster.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would hope. Yeah, I mean, it's probably not going to happen. But, I mean, if he absolutely kills it in spring, it's going to be pretty hard for the Red Sox not to give him a serious look coming out of camp. But I think they do have enough of those, like, utility guys. Like, they also have Hernandez that's probably going to get a little bit of run in the outfield there, too. Hopefully Franchi comes back from this COVID list soon and can get a lot of work in spring training, because I'm assuming he's going to be out there to start. But all those guys have a bunch of question marks, and just right now, like, sky's the limit on him. So I just, as soon as possible, I want to see Duran on the field for the Red Sox.
Yeah, I get the feeling that he will start in the minor leagues.
Yeah.
Bloom has been kind of vocal about the fact that he views AAA as having a lot more value than I think Dave Dombrowski viewed AAA. You know, Dombo talked about that a few times when he was here, that he thought it had some importance, but not nearly as much importance as the jump from high A to double A, and proving yourself at double A to Dombo is pretty much good enough. It seemed like, and we saw some of those jumps for players, but it seems like there are some things about AAA that Heim Bloom values in those looks, and especially because we haven't actually seen Jarren Duran succeed at the AA level with his new swing yet. So I think that they'll probably skip him going to Portland. I think he'll go directly to Worcester, but I do think that they want to see him succeed against AAA competition with that updated swing.
Yeah, that's a great point. Probably working at the alternate site with it wasn't enough, and they want to see it in actual, like, competitive action before. I mean, he had a significantly better second half to 2019 than he did in the first half, but also in the first half, he was hitting like under 100. So yeah, it was kind of hard not to do worse. But I mean, he was able to turn it around to end up finishing the year hitting like 240, 250, which is really impressive for a second half of the season. But you're right, he's continued to make significant changes, and I haven't seen that against anybody else who's not on the team already. So that's probably a pretty good point.
Yeah, and plus, that season for Worcester begins on April 6th. We do have the minor league schedules. And, I mean, anybody who's getting to start this season in Worcester at that brand new beautiful ballpark is probably going to be pretty stoked about it. Obviously, I think the dream for every player is to start at in Boston at Fenway. But, man, like, if you have to start in any place, a brand new shiny AAA ballpark, that's pretty damn good.
Yeah. Do you have a non-Duran prospect that you're really focused on?
I guess I'll look a little bit lower down in the system than Duran, who I think will start at Worcester. I'm probably looking at Casas, honestly, at Portland. That season doesn't begin till May 4th, so I'll have to wait a little bit longer to see him in game action. But I'm really looking to Tristan Casas to see if he can carry over the success that he had at the alternate site, because he was just so impressive by every account at the alternate site. And you know what a big Tristan Casas fan I am. I haven't believed in a Red Sox prospect like this since Xander Bogaerts, to be honest. Like this, I know that sounds crazy, but, you know, people have to remember, Mookie kind of exploded onto the scene randomly. You know, he was not like the high draft pick who, you know, shot out of the gate from day one. It took him a little bit of time. And then when he finally like got going, he was this dynamo. And I think that, I just didn't follow Devers' ascension as closely as I've been following Casas's from the draft. So for me, Casas is the guy I've followed closest since Bogey. And I have complete faith in that bat. And I think that depending on what he does, you know, in spring training and how he looks at Portland, I think there's a non-zero chance that Casas ends up on this major league club by the end of the year. I think by August or even September, he could be on the Red Sox.
I would agree, except what you just laid out about getting some at-bats at AAA. Although I guess it probably won't take long for him to get there either. Yeah, maybe you're right. Yeah, I also wrote a piece for Over the Monster about the potential path for Casas. I think a big piece of it, though, is going to be, I mean, you mentioned that he had a really good season at, or I don't know what you call it, sessions at the alternate site, and had great reports. How much of that will carry over to actually having competitive games again? You know, we won't know how it affects anybody who was at an alternate site or not until we start seeing the games again. But you think with a late start like that, picking up in May, that he still could get to the majors by the end of the season?
Yeah, I think it all depends on what he does at Portland. So I think that if he looks great at spring training and then looks good at extended spring training while they wait for Portland to get going, if he dominates Portland through July, like through the time where the AA All-Star game happens, I could see him going up to Worcester for the second half of July and into August, and probably getting up to Fenway by September. The bat is that advanced, and I think that there's still enough of those people in the Red Sox organization, because like that's one of the things that's been great about the transition to Bloom, is he hasn't just, you know, pushed out all of the institutional knowledge here. He's actually just added to it. He's talked about that collaborative approach since he came to the team, and he's really actually lived it. So I could see people in the organization who are familiar with pushing Red Sox prospects and knowing what those benchmarks are for guys to be ready. The people like Eddie Romero who see these guys day in and day out, and Mike Rickard and these guys, you know, saying to Bloom, listen, like he's passing the checkpoints that we usually see for prospects of his caliber. He's ready. Because they haven't been shy about doing that, those types of promotions with players like Xander Bogaerts or Rafael Devers or the like.
Yeah, that's a pretty fair timeline.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. So let's talk about the outfield, Keaton. It seems like every day that outfield gets a little bit more shaky. We mentioned how, you know, shaky looking it kind of looked even with Cordero. There are a bunch of question marks there, and that's why I think it's so interesting, the timeline of Jarren Duran, and why, you know, mid-year really could be the timeline for him if he succeeds in Worcester. But, like, how do you see this whole thing shaking out? Do you still think that they add anybody to this mix, or is this what they're going to go into camp with, even though Franchi's got himself on the IL for COVID? I mean, hopefully he can come back soon, and it's not a real big deal, but, like, they still just don't have a ton of depth there for my liking.
No, I mean, they really don't. Verdugo is the only one who's basically been a major league regular over the past 2 years. Mm-hmm. So the other guys haven't. So it's not a great situation to be in. They obviously believe in Franchi quite a bit, giving up Benintendi to get him, and they expect him to be an everyday guy. Renfro had a tremendous season the last year he was a regular, but Tampa Bay obviously didn't see him that way, and eventually just parted ways with him. Marwin Gonzalez was getting some everyday time, but kind of all around them. Like, the only thing that we really know is Verdugo's playing center, and Renfro is probably going to be in right. But there's also going to be times where Hernandez is getting in there when Franchi comes back. Obviously, Franchi's supposed to be starting out there and left, but Hernandez holding down second base, probably getting some playing time in the outfield as well. Gonzalez, also Marwin Gonzalez, also getting playing in time in the outfield. It really feels like it's going to be much more rotational outside of Verdugo until maybe Duran comes out. But I'm just going to – that's – I had this on the agenda because basically that entire rotation besides Verdugo, I want to see how that plays out in the spring. And is it really going to be consistent? Obviously, with Cordero now missing some time, it's going to get a little bit muddled. But is it going to be consistently Verdugo, Renfro, Cordero? Or how much are they going to be like switching and giving guys time in the outfield? Because spring training, we're probably going to see a lot of that anyway. But like, how are the games starting? Or is the first inning or two, those three guys are always in the outfield? Or is it going to be much more rotational than that? And it feels like, because they have guys that have not been regulars in the outfield, that it will be more rotational. But then, as you pointed out, they don't really have much depth, so I don't know how it could be.
Yeah, so like, who's in that rotation? Is it Enrique Hernandez moving into center field, Verdugo shifting over to right, and Renfro moving to left, or Cordero staying in the game late in the game with the lead, and then someone like Marwin or Arroyo, whoever's on the bench that day, coming in to fill in at second? Is that how you see them closing out games?
Potentially. I feel like because they have made like a rash of these kind of not exciting, but like filler moves, we've kind of lost sight of how excited they were for Christian Arroyo at the end of 2020. Mm-hmm. And they seemed pretty content going into the year with him as the everyday second baseman. So I wonder how often, even in just like throughout the week, Hernandez gets a start in the outfield with Arroyo at second. Or is Hernandez really, is it going to be like 5-6 days a week with him at second base? I mean, you're probably right. It's probably going to be more of like an in-game thing where they move Hernandez to the outfield and then bring Arroyo in. But they're still pretty high on Arroyo. So I it'll be interesting to see how many at-bats he gets and just how they end up utilizing him.
Yeah. Yeah, it is going to be interesting. And I think that, you know, what this does to me is it just further solidifies the fact that they feel like Duran is definitely in their plans at some point this year. Because if Duran wasn't in their plans, they would have done something else in this outfield. And at this point, it just seems very unlikely that they add anybody else to this mix.
Yeah, if JBJ was coming back, it would have happened by now. And you'd have it to feels think that, way. That yeah. they're, yeah. And the reason that it hasn't has to be because they're feeling aggressive about Duran, because there probably wasn't room for both of them on the roster. And if they felt that Duran's going to be here sooner than later, then they wouldn't have made the investment in JBJ. And that kind of feels like how it's played out.
Yeah, so that means that second base is probably going to be, like we said, dominated mostly by Enrique Hernandez, with Christian Arroyo getting some time there. Marwin Gonzalez, I kind of expect to play a good amount of second base as well, especially when Enrique is out in center field. But I kind of expect Marwin to play everywhere, a little bit more than Arroyo. I think Arroyo is going to get most of his time at second base. I think Marwin's going to play a little bit of first, sub in at shortstop. I think we might see him in the corners, especially, you know, if this thing elongates with Cordero, I think that Marwin might start in left field to start the year, you know, if anything happens with his health. Marwin has more of the feel of an everyday guy to me than Christian Arroyo.
I hope so. I don't feel as confident in Arroyo as potentially the Red Sox might. So I would lean your way in giving Gonzalez more of the at-bats. But I think this is – it's as lackluster as the moves, I guess, had been in the offseason, it does make for interesting spring training. And I am either just really hurting – for baseball to come back, or I'm actually going to be watching spring training games to see how this works out. And it's probably a combination of both, but I don't know which one has the lion's share of that ratio.
Yeah, I will be fully transparent. I will watch spring training baseball if it is on. So, your boy, though, Michael Chavis, it's time to have some hard facts about him. I am having trouble, Keaton, seeing where he fits on this roster. Is there a fit? Is there a place for him? Or is he going to be in Worcester enjoying the amenities of the new stadium?
Yeah, I don't see how he fits either, and that's a bummer. At least to start, for sure. He's probably going to have to go back there and, you know, prove that he can be a more exciting piece. Even right now, I don't really see how he fits on the 26. So, particularly with the addition of Gonzalez, that really kind of felt like the last squeeze there of we've seen enough, which is a bummer because he's still really young and I want him to homers go so far. It's just so fun to watch. So but yeah, I agree with you. I think he's gonna start there and may just play out there because it's like I don't if they're gonna have Arroyo in there over him, like he's gonna have to make some noise in AAA to crack this 26. I mean, I just keep coming back to how like happy they were or how highly Bloom spoke of Arroyo. But it seemed like he's much more committed to him, and Chavis would just really have to ball out at AAA to work his way back into this roster, but I just don't see it.
Yeah, bottom line for Chavis is he needs to fix that fatal flaw that he has, not being able to hit high fastballs. Until he gets that figured out, I just don't see a way that he can succeed as a major leaguer. It's too big of a hole to exploit for pitchers. So I don't see a path for him. But I will say, as a Worcester native, Main South, Webster Square area, Chavis, pick yourself up some Coney Island hot dogs. My grandma started taking me there a real long time ago, like way, way back in the day. Coney Island dog is great. Coney dog. You get yourself a hot dog. Have you ever had one of these, Keaton? It's basically mustard, onion, and chili on a dog. Yeah. It's like a real thin dog. It's a real Worcester institution, and it's real close to the new ballpark.
While we're on the topic of hot dogs, have you ever had the experience of a Chicago hot dog?
Hell yeah.
So you enjoy it? You're a fan?
I mean, I do enjoy it, Keaton. I won't say that I like, that's not my go-to dog. Like I would have a Coney dog, or I would have, you know, a Fenway Frank, or, you know, depending on, but I enjoy them for what they are. I find them to be a unique hot dog experience.
All right. That's a good way to put it. It's too much on the hot dog for me. Which is way too much.
It's a lot of stuff. It's a whole vegetable platter.
Yeah. It's just too much. I'm not a great Chicagoan. I think Italian beef is way overrated, and deep dish pizza is terrible, and I don't like Chicago dogs. But okay. No, besides that, the city's great.
So no Portillo's for you?
No. No. I do get lots of strange looks, though. But I am who I am.
Yeah, you're a Mainer through and through. You probably like your red snappers then.
Oh, of course I do.
Yeah.
Go to. Just a steamed bun, steamed dog, one line of ketchup.
Okay.
Perfect. Okay.
My go-to ketchup topping, hot dog topping is not ketchup. My ideal, like, go-to hot dog in the summertime, if I'm not getting a true Coney dog, I will just do a little spicy mustard and some chopped up raw onion. That's my jam.
That's a good combo. I like it.
It's pretty solid. All right, moving on from hot dogs here, let's talk about some pitchers. The closer, the back end of the Red Sox bullpen, seems like it's going to be a little bit in flux. We're not sure who's 100% going to have that closer's role. Adam Ottavino and Matt Barnes are pretty similar in a lot of ways. They both strike out a lot of guys, both have some walk issues. To be honest, I probably feel a little bit more confident in Ottavino. But I kind of feel like this job might be Matt Barnes's to start the year. Who do you think is going to end up with the lion's share of the starts at closer? Or the opportunities, I should say.
Yeah. So we talked about this last time that we were on. So originally this, I hadn't gotten Shelley's thoughts, who was supposed to be on this podcast but was feeling ill. So glad she's feeling better today. But now she's not on. I feel like it's going to be a mix of the two, and I don't know if Cora will have like those slated roles for the innings. I think it'll be more of the difficulty of the lineup in the eighth or the ninth, because I think that Ottavino is a better pitcher. And so I think Cora wants to be more flexible with his bullpen. So I think they probably end up with the same amount, right around the same amount of saves at the end of the year. But who gets the first crack? Probably Barnes, because he's not the incumbent, but just the vet with the team, Ottavino being the newcomer. But I don't think they're going to have real set roles. I think it's those two guys, but I think it'll be pretty interchangeable.
I'm going to tell you an X factor here for this bullpen. I would love to see Sawamura take over as the closer and have Ottavino, Barnes, Brazier, Darwin's in, all those guys mix and match in whatever high leverage situations Cora wants, and not have either of those two as the closer. That'd be ideal.
I would feel fine with that.
Yeah. But, I mean, that comes down to control, right? Sawamura's control is kind of an issue, but the stuff is ridiculous. So how is that different than Ottavino and Barnes, you know?
I was going to say, I mean, Kimbrel's had pretty excessive walk issues, and he still could get 35, 40 saves a year.
There we go. I think there's something there. And also with Sawamura, he's 33, almost 33 years old. We're not going to be thinking about, like, you know, if you all of a sudden put Darwin's in the closer's role, you'd be thinking about, and as gross as this sounds, like, okay, how is this going to affect his arbitration years when he comes up? Because getting saves actually like affects arbitration quite a bit and stuff like that. So you might not see them want to turn over the role to a young guy like Hernandez, but Sawamura being a veteran on a short deal, like, screw it, man. Who cares? Just throw him in that role.
And speaking of Hernandez, they're committed to him as a reliever, right? They're not going to try and stretch him out and give him starts like they
did
last
year. Okay, good. It seems that they are fully committed to that right now, and there have been no indications. And also, their starting depth is way better than it was before, so I don't really think there's a need. And reports on Garrett Whitlock have been quite good from camp early on. So his stuff apparently looks awesome.
Great.
Yeah. I'm excited about that. So let's talk a bit about that rotation before we move on and get to our listener questions here. Rotation as it sits right now is going to be Erod probably getting the opening day start. Eovaldi, Garrett Richards, who looks fantastic right now. Love Martin it. Perez. Me too, man. I've come around to Team Garrett Richards. Nick Pivetta. But then there is some talk that they could extend this out into a six-man rotation, which, you know, could end up being Whitlock or Andrees. Probably Andrees, I would guess, out of that duo. But the other guys who could possibly be up there, Tanner Houck, Connor Siebold, Brian Mata, all on the 40-man roster, I think I would put them in that order, Houck, Siebold, Mata, in terms of likelihood to come up and get those starts. I mean, how do you see them? Do you think they'll go with the 5-man or the 6-man rotation to start off the year?
Well, I mean, there's a bunch of random off days to begin the year, right? I don't think there's a need to jump into a 6-man right away.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Or at least the first turn through, it wouldn't make sense. But I don't think they have more depth than they had last year. But it's not spectacular depth. So I would prefer to go with a 5, and then if you needed a spot from one of those guys, then you have options for that spot start or doubleheader, whatever. I don't think it makes sense going to a 6-man rotation with the quality of guys that they have. I mean, unless Pivetta ends up finding himself and Houck continues to pitch like he ended last season, then those guys would definitely have to be in the rotation. But I don't feel great about Pivetta. I feel better about Houck, but there's still questions about it. 6 just seems like a stretch because I just don't think they have the quality for it. And I'd rather just have 5 guys and turn it over, get back to Erod and Eovaldi rather than extend out mediocre pitchers.
Yeah, I don't see a need for it right now either. So I agree. I think they're going to run with a 5, and I think there's enough flexibility with those long guys in the bullpen that they don't have to be as deliberate about, all that jazz with the 6-man rotation to start off the year. So I feel pretty confident in the 5-man thing. All right, let's move on to our listener questions today. First one comes from Sox South, and he says, I think it makes a lot of sense for Chavis to find himself with a stint in AAA. If he is optioned, do you think he should focus on one position or multiple positions, and what should they be? Of course, if he can't lay off the high fastballs where he plays, it won't matter. That's an interesting question,
yeah.
In terms of what he should focus on, because he's played a little bit of second. He's played some first, but he's a little bit undersized for that. He's a natural third baseman, but he was drafted as a shortstop. He's clearly not a shortstop. He could probably play third, but not incredibly well. I mean, what makes him most valuable as a trade chip, in your opinion?
Yeah, this is a really good question. he also had a little bit of time in the outfield, but I don't think that's where he should land. I keep coming back to second, but I don't know. I mean, I guess, yeah, I mean, you're right. You said he's undersized for first, so it doesn't make sense to give him there. I don't know if he could. Yeah, I think second would be where it makes the most sense. But I also think he hit it on the head that his return to the majors is probably not going to be the Red Sox.
Yeah.
And second probably makes him the most valuable as a trade target.
Yeah, I'd say second or third would make him more valuable. I don't know if this is possible for him to, at this point in his career, eke out any more athleticism to potentially be more viable at third base. But I think that would be very valuable. I think focusing on that left side of the infield a little bit more than he has been, you know, when he's been trying to get used to second and first, would be a good idea. And maybe with Jeter Downs at Worcester, probably drawing at least some starts at second base, maybe he could find himself at third base on those days.
Yeah.
So that might be interesting. Sam Biggs has our next question. He says, even on a dreadful team last year, the clubhouse seemed to be a positive place to be. What or who do you think has the most positive influence on the club's atmosphere?
I think three things, one of which was missing last year. Combination of Devers and Bogarts together is a great influence, and then also Alex Cora. And I think he had been in the dugout long enough in 2018 and 2019 that guys kind of knew what the atmosphere was and could keep that going in a shortened season in 2020. Obviously, now he's back in 2021. I would say those, to me, are the three biggest factors of that positive clubhouse vibe.
Yeah, I think the clubhouse vibe was okay last year. I guess I would disagree with Sam that it was as positive as he thought it was. I think that there was a little bit of a lack of energy. And I think Cora has mentioned that as well a couple times, that the team seemed to get a little bit complacent at times. And I think that this happened not just in all of the in the Red Sox clubhouse, but in all of the clubhouses, or a lot of the clubhouses, because of the pandemic and everything going on with life. But I think that I totally agree with you about the Xander Devers thing, in particular with an importance to Xander. But I think that two guys who are going to drastically improve the clubhouse outside of Cora, because I 100% agree with you there, Kike Hernandez is going to be huge for the clubhouse. Every report I've heard on him is just awesome. And then Chris Sale being back and with the team is going to be huge. And Chris Sale, in a couple of early interviews this spring, has already mentioned like wanting to bring more of that competitive, like step on your throat type edge that Chris Sale brings with him every place he goes. So I think they do need a little bit more of that element. And I think that Sale will help inject that a little bit more, which I'm stoked about.
Yeah, I completely agree. And particularly with Hernandez.
Yeah. Brendan has our next question. He says, what top three prospects have a chance to make a difference in the MLB squad this season? And who do you believe could have a breakout 2021 season? I'm not sure if he's talking about breakout 2021 season for a prospect there or on the major league team. So I guess pick your poison with that.
I'll go one of each.
Okay.
Three prospects. We already talked about two of them. Duran and Casas, and I think Hauk would be the third for me.
Okay. Yep.
And then a breakout prospect for 2021, I'm going to go Blaze Jordan.
Okay.
And MLB, I mean, he's already had breakouts, but it's the return of the break with Garrett Richards.
Ooh, like that. I think Garrett Richards is going to have a huge season too.
Yeah.
I think Eovaldi has a really good year for the Red Sox this year. I'm looking for him to stay healthy as well. So those would be my picks. I agree with you on Duran and Casas. Instead of Hauk for my third guy, I'm going to go with somebody who we haven't seen in a little while. I think Thad Ward's going to make a little bit of noise this year, and we might hear from him.
Good one.
You know, he was somebody who wasn't at the alternate site, so we haven't seen him in a little bit, but I still like Thad Ward quite a bit. And breakout at the major league level, that's interesting. I think that we will see the best Marwin Gonzalez season that we've seen since 2017 this year. I don't know why I feel that way, but I just feel like he's happy to be here.
I was going to make a joke about what happened there and what happened here, but probably don't need to.
The trash cans?
I mean, yeah, it could be related to that, but is that why you think he's going to have the best year?
I don't know, man. Trying to carry my optimism. Trying to be a glass half full guy on Marwin.
Fair. I mean, it's going to be unavoidable, but, you know, it's going to happen.
Yeah. And last two questions come from Angel Rondon. And first one, he says, based on our 2021 draft picks, the amount of pieces we can trade and the Red Sox having a minor league season this year, can you predict where our farm system will be ranked after the 2021 trade deadline? That's his first question. And his second question is, which Red Sox pitcher finishes with the most innings pitched this year? The second one is really interesting. The first one is also interesting. I'm gonna give my answers first. I'm going to say the Red Sox system after the 2021 trade deadline is ranked 14th in baseball, just barely a top half system. And I'm going to say Red Sox pitcher with the most innings pitched this year is Garrett freaking Richards.
Oh, yeah. Love it. Yeah, I was kind of going in the same direction with you with the assuming they have like around a 20th now, depending on which rankings you look at. I figure top 15.
Yep.
With like 12 being the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And that's if they get my man Jack Leiter, who I would love, who talked about. We got a bunch of questions about this. When the Red Sox locked in their draft position, we did a pod with Matt, and there's a bunch of mocks that had Jack Leiter going 7th, and I was like, hell no. No way he gets past the Red Sox at 4. Gimme. And boy, did he have a wonderful debut. So with him, I think they can get up to 12, but they'll probably be in that like 12 to 15 range.
I love that. And Jack Leiter was pumping 100 in his first start with Vandy, so... that's looking pretty damn good. They're going to have some nice options picking 4th. Really nice.
I want to go with Richard as my choice, but I feel like it'll be Martin Perez.
Oh, man. That's the boring, safe choice. We've switched roles, apparently.
We really have.
What's happening? But we'd better end this podcast before anything crazy happens and we... Freaky Friday or whatever the body switching thing is that people do.
Fair.
All right. So before we get out of here, Keaton, is there anything that the people should be checking out that you've written or done lately?
Yeah, I just wrote up a piece about where the Red Sox currently stand within the division. After some projection systems came out, nice. Pecota came out with what their thoughts on the 2021 season look like. Fangraphs came out with theirs like a week or so before Pecota. At Baseball Prospectus, Fangraphs was much more optimistic and had, I think it was 87 or 88 wins. Pecota had him at 80, but I just kind of took a look at the projection systems and the Red Sox at a high level and how the projection systems see them and what could attribute to their outcome here in 2021. Nice. That's overthemonster.com.
I also wrote a piece at OTM yesterday on why the Red Sox should not extend Eduardo Rodriguez, why he should not be an extension priority for them. So check that piece out. And yeah, that's it. So thank you for joining us today. We appreciate you taking the time out of your day to add us to your routine, whether you're at the gym or, you know, listening in your car or to wind down or whatever. We do appreciate being part of your day and the support. So please tell your friends, subscribe to the show, rate and review us. And we thank you very much. So we'll be with you next.